From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The next White House administration could have its first African-American attorney general. And with a win in Alaska, one that took 2 weeks to confirm, the Democrats are closer to filibuster-proof control of the U.S. Senate. Here to talk politics, we've got Democratic strategist Donna Brazile. She's an author and a nationally syndicated columnist. And Ron Christie, the CEO of Christie Strategies. He's also a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
So, reports say that the president-elect Barack Obama has offered Eric Holder the job as attorney general. He's expected to accept. He was the deputy AG in the Clinton administration. He's African-American. And I spoke to him before the election about challenges that the Justice Department is going to face in the next administration.
And then when you look at the other issues that I think the next president is going to have to deal with, chief among them is going to be trying to revitalize and remake a Justice Department that has been really sullied in the last 4-8 years or so by people who tried to politicize it. And I want to make very clear, I am excluding the present attorney general, who I think is doing a good job, and as well as the people who served as deputy attorney general, who I think have done a good job.
You know, Donna, when you think about the narrative of the Obama administration, there's definitely been one where it's about, revitalizing America's place in the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What do you see from Holder coming up if he takes this position?
First of all, I think Eric Holder would make an incredible attorney general. I've known Eric for many, many years. In fact, I worked with Eleanor Holmes Norton, the congresswoman from the District of Columbia, who recommended Eric Holder as the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia. He is by far an exceptional lawyer. He knows the Justice Department, having served there during the Clinton administration. I think he will bring a great deal of credibility in not only restructuring that department so that it can handle some of the most important cases going forward, whether it's national security, the prisoner status at Guantanamo Bay and what we do with that facility, as well as making sure that our nation gets back to equal protection under the law. So I would endorse this announcement once it's made by the president-elect.
Ron, when you think about this man who is, possibly poised to be incredibly powerful, there is this question of his involvement with former President Clinton's pardon of the fugitive financier Mark Rich. Do you think that an issue like that could hold up his appointment, or is that too insider?
I think it could be too inside baseball. I mean, certainly I have a number of concerns about the then Deputy Attorney General Holder's role in the pardoning issue. I think the Clinton administration bungled that, to say it very politely. I think that they issued pardons in one of the most egregious manners possible. But that being said, everything that I have known and heard about Eric Holder, and having worked with him briefly, and he even spoke at my law school graduation over 10 years ago, he's certainly a man of exceptional intellect. And one thing that struck me when he gave a speech at GW Law School 10 years ago was that he said that regardless of how successful the most African-American person is, when the day still comes that people cross the street when they're in neighborhoods, when they're looking at somebody based merely upon the color of their skin, they're going to look at you, they're going to look at that individual the same way. So we have to move beyond a system where people are judged fairly or unfairly based on the color of their skin, be they the most powerful and successful lawyer or the most young and struggling individual. And that's always struck me, and I thought that was a very profound statement that he made.
Donna, do you have any other thoughts on this cabinet? You know, there's been the talk of whether or not Senator Hillary Clinton could be the Secretary of State. There's reports that Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle is going to become the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Any thoughts on how this cabinet is shaping up?
I think, first of all, the president-elect has announced some of his key White House advisors. Valerie Jarrett joined that rank as a senior advisor and assistant to the president for both public liaison and intergovernmental affairs. It looks like the administration is shaping up quite strongly. The president-elect has put together a strong policy team comprised of people from all walks of life. He will review and analyze some of the major initiatives that his new administration will face. But in terms of the cabinet position, because I think everybody loves the Washington, D.C. parlor game, he has an embarrassment of riches. As I look at some of the names that are still floating out there, you mentioned Tom Daschle. Of course, we've heard that Robert Gates might stay on at the Department of Defense. When you look at positions like HUD, another key office, given the foreclosure crisis, Jim Clyburn's name is out there. Shirley Franklin, the mayor of Atlanta, Georgia, her name has been mentioned. Clearly, with regards to the Department of Labor, there are a number of key people who are under consideration, as well as the Department of Education. So I think it's coming along very well. But again, these are names that are being floated out there. President-elect Obama will likely not make any announcements until after Thanksgiving.
All right. I want to move ahead, Ron, with the question of filibuster-proof majorities. We're talking about the Senate. Republican Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, who is a convicted felon at this point, just lost his seat to the Democrat Mark Begich. Two Senate races are still undecided. It's a very strange situation. But first of all, give us a brief taste of why 60 is a magic number in the Senate. And then, you know, do you think that the Democrats will grab that?
Well, the reason that 60 is a magic number in the United States Senate is that in order to cut off debate, there's a procedure known as a cloture vote. And what that really says in plain English is saying, stop talking, let's vote on an issue, let's move forward. And you need 60 votes to invoke cloture. So when you look at it from the other side, it's important for the minority, if they want to exercise any ability to control what goes on in the chamber, to at least have a number of votes, and of course the magic number is 40, so that you can interrupt a cloture vote, or you can say, look, you're going to have to deal with me, because if you don't, then you're going to be stuck in a situation where you can't pass anything. So 60 is the magic number. Looking at the Republican status right now, I think it was expected that Senator Stevens was going to go down. Seven-time indicted and now convicted felon, he needed to go one way or the other. But now you're looking at two crucial races, one in Minnesota where Norm Coleman is trying to hang on against the former Saturday Night Live comedian Al Franken, and of course in Georgia, Saxby Chambliss is the Republican incumbent. I don't think the Democrats are going to get that magic 60 number. I do think that we'll be able to hold on in Georgia, but at this point, Minnesota is just too close to call.
Donna, there's another issue that relates directly to this, and that is Senator Joseph Lieberman. He's keeping his chairmanship of the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Now, this is the guy who was the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats in 2000, but this election around, he supported Senator McCain. He spoke at the Republican convention. He criticized Senator Obama several times, saying, for example, that Obama would meet with, quote, the leaders of the most vicious anti-American regimes on the planet. So why is he still kind of maybe not getting the warm hug, but at least the, you know, like the pat on the shoulder from the Democrats?
I don't think he's getting the pat anywhere. I think what the Democrats decided to do, and remember, this is politics. They decided that they wanted Joe Lieberman to remain in the caucus as my good friend noted, to try to achieve a filibuster-proof majority. Joe Lieberman has voted with the Democratic Party 90% of the time. Of course, he does not vote with the party on national security matters as well as Iraq. But I think the signal really came from President-elect Obama that the Democratic Party, the Democratic Congress, should not be about revenge or grudges, but to give Joe Lieberman a second chance. Now, look, we all want to agree on how we go about doing our political business, but when you see over two-thirds of the caucus voting in the affirmative to keep him not only in the caucus but also in that position, clearly Joe Lieberman went in there hat in hand, apologized, asked for forgiveness, and they decided to move forward, keeping him closer and not throwing him out of the caucus.
All right. Yet another leadership issue. I mean, this is a time when there's so much shifting sand. That's that the Congressional Black Caucus has elected U.S. Congresswoman Barbara Lee of California as its new chair. You also have Congressman James Clyburn reelected to his post of House Majority Whip. But Congresswoman Lee was the only congressperson to vote against military involvement in Iraq in 2001. And one of the things I wonder, Ron, is whether or not there will be a perception that the CBC is moving further to the left.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Congresswoman Barbara Lee represents a district right across the bay from where I'm from in Oakland, the former seat from Ron Dellums in Berkeley, California, which is long known for its peace activist roots. The question that I throw out there, and I'm sure my good friend Ms. Brazil is going to jump on me for this, is why do we have a Congressional Black Caucus now? You know, I think that this is a relic whose time has come and gone. We certainly now have a president-elect and a senator, or now Barack Obama, who is the first African-American who's elected to be the president of the United States. You have James Clyburn, who is a very senior leader in the House of Representatives as well, who's also African-American. There are issues that confront this country from economics to housing to a car crisis, but I don't see things as being inherently black issues or inherently white issues. I see them as being American issues.
I have to jump in because we're closing in on the end, and Donna, you know, just give me a little tiny bit of your response.
Well, first of all, Barbara Lee is a champion for justice and freedom, and, you know, she just led a successful passage of legislation to remove Nelson Mandela from the U.S. terrorist list. I'm honored that she is not only going to chair the caucus, but lead the caucus at a time when we are experiencing a moment of national crisis with the economy, as well as trying to get us out of two wars. Just because we elected a black president doesn't mean that racism is dead in America. It may be off the radar, but it is still alive and well.
But I just don't know what black issues are. I'll leave it with that. I agree with you, Donna, but what are black issues?
Well, I'll tell you what black issues is simple. It is the enforcement of our civil rights. It is ensuring that we keep expanding equal opportunity for all. And it is making sure that we live truly in the promised land that Dr. King foresaw for all of us.
Okay, guys. It's a lot to talk about. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you.
As always, bye.
We may not need more black leaders, but we need black people fighting for freedom and justice, my friend.
All right. That was Democratic strategist and nationally syndicated columnist Donna Brazile, plus Ron Christie, CEO of Christie Strategies. He joined us from NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C.